When I say beyond the border, I'm talking about this side of the border, not the other side, and what we refer to as our domestic programs, our domestic quarantines, domestic survey, as opposed to the international inspection at the border, which you've been hearing about. So I'm the domestic diagnostics coordinator in Riverdale, Maryland, at National Identification Service. So historically, our identifiers, actually going back until the 1970s, the identifiers were employed by the USDA Agricultural Research Service, and they're the ones that did the identification at the ports of entry. And then in the 1970s, APHIS and Plant Protection Quarantine was created, and so since then, the identifiers have been in APHIS. Domestic side of it is a lot has to do with conducting surveys, and this is so that we can detect pests early when they enter the country after they've gotten through the border. And this activity really started in the 1980s with the Cooperative Agricultural Pest Survey Program. Before that, I imagine they would find a pest after it had become widespread, and then maybe did surveys to see where else it was in the country, but there wasn't much of an effort to detect them early. So they developed a program called CAPS, which provides funding to our state departments of agriculture to look for pests that we don't have in this country, or pests not known to occur. And that program is increased in funding. It started with something like $6 million a year, and it stayed pretty flat for a couple of decades. And then after 9/11, with the interest in biosecurity and invasive species, that they increased the funding, and now we're up to something like $28 million for pest detection in general. But Plant Protection Quarantine also conducts surveys in addition to State Departments of Agriculture funded surveys. And then we also have national surveys where we work cooperatively with the states, and some recent examples of those for the light brown apple moth and the European grapevine moth, which were found in California, and we needed to find out where else in the U.S. they were, so we had national surveys, and then same with panicle rice mite, and most recently Duponcellia fovealis. Now, CAPS, or the Cooperative Agriculture Pest Survey, as I mentioned, is a $28 million. Well, actually, the whole line item in the budget is $28 million. A big portion of that goes for CAPS, and this is money provided to the states for specific pest surveys through cooperative agreements. And it's targeted not just at insects, but also plant pathogens, mollusks, snails, and nematodes. And this is focused on pests not known to occur in the U.S. and that would have economic damage or environmental impact. And the idea is here is early detection, so our options for controlling it are more real than if it was found widespread. And all the data generated from these surveys is entered into the National Agricultural Pest Information System, or called NAPIS, which is housed at Purdue University, and it generates these maps so that if a pest has been looked for in a county, the negative data is entered that it's not known to occur in that county based on the survey, and also any positives are entered. So these occurrence maps are generated through the NAPIS system. And while the main focus is early detection, it also has a function to facilitate trade in that we can generate the map showing that pests in a certain area do not occur, so that if a country is accepting our agricultural product, let's say a specific commodity from a particular area in a country for a particular host, we can say that area is not free of the pest. And with the funding goes a lot of infrastructure for hiring people and to conduct these surveys with the states. We have lists of pests that we generate every year that are the high priority ones we want to survey for, and these are prioritized, and the states can pick from the list. They can also survey for some pests that are particular concern in their area. Because it makes more sense if you're looking at for a pest, say, on grapes, you might as well look for other pests while you're looking. Now, we've combined a lot of these surveys into what we call commodity surveys. So we have them for grapes, citrus, pine, and soybean, and some other commodities as well. So the way that the samples are generated in these surveys is for insects is usually traps, pheromone traps or other kinds of traps. For plant diseases, it may be visual. Of course, nematodes could be soil samples. But what we have is a lot of work to be able to screen and sort these samples. The first step is sorting them, is to try to remove any debris and any of the non-target orders. And then screening would be if you're looking for a particular species to screen out anything that's, say, not in that family or not in that genus. And this is so that when a taxonomist, say, at the state level looks at it, they only have to look at a small number of potential pests rather than a whole sample. So we try to educate our surveyors and have screening aids produced. And this is one example when we have that Jim Labonte at the Oregon Department of Agriculture, along with his able staff of photographers and entomologists, developed for scolatine beetles found in Lindgren funnel traps. And he has a couple of these very very nice screening aids with pictures of a lot of the native scolatines, or all the native scolatines that are normally found in traps, and also what the exotics look like that we're looking for. Another example with the light brown apple moth, here you're talking about a tortricid, which has has sexual dimorphism in the adults and the variation in wing patterns. It's a small moth. It gets in sticky traps. And, plus the pheromone attracts a lot of other non-target lepidoptera that look very similar. Not so much these big noctuids or pyralids, but other tortricids. And so it's important to be able to have different levels of screening and ways to filter out all the non-targets before it goes to a taxonomist. So we've had, with the help of Steve Pessoa, Mark Epstein, and Todd Gilligan and others, developed a really nice screening aid for this. And one of our domestic identifiers has generated a lot of these screening aids, Julieta Brambilla down in Gainesville, Florida. She's a PPQ domestic identifier. And so what we can say is that with all the samples generated, most of them are filtered out at the state level and are looked at by either state entomologists, if they have suspect exotics, or at the, say, a university land-grant institution, or our PPQ identifiers. And in some cases, we use independent institutions. And once they've narrowed it down, here's the cooperators I'm talking about. With the State Departments of Ag, which are represented by the National Plant Board, they have state survey coordinator in each state funded through CAPS, and also state entomologists in many cases, but not all cases. There's our USDA PPQ, which we have state survey coordinators, state survey specialists who are... They maybe cover several states, and they work closely with the state departments of agriculture and universities. And then at the National Plant Diagnostic Network, which was mentioned by Joe earlier, there are diagnostic labs that we cooperate with for plant diseases and also taxonomists. These are some of our domestic identifiers. Julieta, I mentioned earlier, she's co-housed with the Florida Division of Plant Industry in Gainesville, Florida. Bobby Brown, he specializes in forest pests, and he's at Purdue University in the entomology department. And the reason we have him in the entomology department is because, they have access to their collections, and they can interact with the university entomology department. And then Kira, I forgot to change this slide. Her name is Kira Metz now. She's at Texas A&M, and she is our domestic identifier that helps service our western region. I mentioned independent institutions. The Carnegie Museum of Natural History in Pittsburgh looks at bark beetle samples from various states, and they have an interest in this. They're doing it on a fee basis, but it's reasonable, and they are interested in the distribution of various species in the eastern U.S. So for them, it generates data on native species, but at the same time, they can look for the exotics. And they've helped us on a number of surveys. We also have arrangements with some universities at Mississippi State. Richard Brown, he receives unscreened samples from neighboring states, and he's interested in bark beetles, or he's a lepidopterist, but he's interested in the distribution of all moth species within his region, and he's also looking for exotics for us, and he also accepts bark beetles. He has somebody on his staff who can do that. And then at the Washington Department of Ag, Eric Lagasa is interested in lep, and he accepts samples from other states, and the Oregon Department of Ag, Jim Labonte as well. And he works on bark borers. I mentioned him earlier with the screening aid. So once a sample has been narrowed down by a state taxonomist or an identifier that they think they have something exotic, they will send it forward, filling out a form, and it goes to a PPQ, National Identification Service Recognized Authority. So for the national level, we use, as I mentioned in a previous talk, the Systematic Entomology Laboratory as part of ARS for that. But for others, we have national mycologists, malacologists, plant pathologists, and so on. And then it gets a little complicated. Once we get a confirmation, it's important that we communicate it correctly. And we sort of have a top-down communication. In the past, the pest might, if it came from SEL, it would go back to the originator of the sample or the taxonomist. But if it was a really important pest, something that could cause political wrangling with the agricultural community in that state, they might say person in charge of the state for the Department of Ag might be the last person to know, and so we filter the information to our state representatives of PPQ and the State Department of Agriculture. And if it's a new pest, a lot of other people get notified. If it's a new pest to the U.S. and there's this whole acronym soup of people involved, but what happens if it's a new pest is it goes to our new pest advisory group, which is part of our science wing, the CFIST in Raleigh, North Carolina, and they analyze it and make recommendations to our executive team. They consult with the National Plant Board on what kind of action should be taken or not taken, and the decision is left at the executive level. But if it's something that we're familiar with and it's just a new state record or something, we communicate that back out to the field, and they find out that way. It's usually done just by email. Now, I just wanted to highlight a few of the new detections in the last few years. It seems like there were a lot of Heteroptera in 2008, 2009 found around the country. These are I put them all together in sort of a gallery because they're kind of attractive looking, but there was a fire bug found in Salt Lake City, Utah in 2008, a pyrochorid. The Bagrata bug from Africa found in Los Angeles in 2008, but now it's down in the Imperial Coachella Valleys and also around Yuma, Arizona, and it's doing a lot of damage to brassica crops, I understand, and it's also in northern Mexico across the border. This Korea from Africa found in California, I haven't heard much about that. There was the red bug, another pyrochorid found in California in 2009. The bean platyspid from Asia was found in Georgia and South Carolina, and this feeds on kudzu, which you think would be a good thing, but also can go to soybeans. And then the there's a cassava lace bug found in Florida in 2009. Some other new insects found, this Bactrocera abstergata found in California. I have to assume this was eradicated like a lot of the fruit flies are handled when they're found in California. The leek moth, which was found in Canada in the early 2000s, made it into upstate New York just a couple years ago. It feeds on onions and leeks, and they found it mainly in backyard garden situations. The European grapevine moth found in Napa County, California, last year, and there's a big program now to control that. This Agrylis scolcacolis, found in Canada first, it looked very similar to a native Agrylis that we have, and found out that that we also have it in Michigan and New York. And then Drosophila suzukii, which is a really serious pest. It's been found in a number of states. And first was found in California. And the Planococcus minor, the passion vine mealybug, was found in Hawaii last year, I believe. And this is a pest that we had been looking for in our surveys. Dupuntcellia fovealis, I understand, doesn't have a recognized common name, but this is a pest that was first found in California and then found in a number of other counties in California, mainly around greenhouse situations or nursery situations, rather, with a lot of times found around Walmarts and other big box store nursery sections. And we did a survey this past fall, the southern states, and found it in a number of states, again, around these big box stores. And it doesn't, nobody's really noticed any damage it's causing, but it's definitely there. And then very recently, this red palm weevil was found in Laguna Beach, California, and it's a pest in many parts of the world on all palms. This is, you know, palms and are an icon in California, and it attacks the Phoenix palms, the Canary Island palm, the date palm, and also Washingtonia. And they've only found a couple of them and taken out the trees, but they're doing an intensive survey to see if there are more. And this Hypogeococcus pungens, the Harrisia mealybug, which is in Puerto Rico and Florida, and causing damage, severe damage in Puerto Rico on columnar cacti, was just found in a Beverly Hills plant, a Cirrus peruviana plant in a residential area. Don't really know what's going on with that, but it could get on the native columnar cacti in southern California and southern Arizona. So, do I have any time for questions or?
1 minute. Any questions for anybody?
Hi, I just wanted to ask you about the Spontellia and the green boxes that you had in the east compared to the yellow boxes. What were those green, the greens worth?
Green would, I believe there was some up in New York. It means it was surveyed for and not found. So it was negative data. I don't think it, from what I've heard about the pest, it's most likely to survive in the southern tier states. What I've heard, the big pathway for that pest is people moving around the offshoots of the plant. But it could be larvae. I mean, they had a picture of Pat Marquez here trying to eat some in a previous slide.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And